Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We wish to greet our new affiliate, WMQM AM 1600. That's a 50,000-watt station in Memphis, Tennessee, that's going to be carrying Mark Dankos, America, and the Republic Broadcasting Network to a much wider conventional radio audience in the American South. We are joined today by Meir Javadanfar, who resides in Israel, and Meir is the chief executive of an organization called the Middle East Economic and Political Analysis Company. You can find that, those of you who are listening, by turning to www.meepas.com. That's www.meepas.com. And as I have mentioned as a preliminary introduction to Meir, he is both Jewish and an Iranian, and presumably has a very interesting perspective on what is happening in the Middle East as it relates to controversies surrounding Iran and Israel and the United States. Meir, how are you?
Thank you, Mark. How are you?
Very good. Listen, just in the way of a little bit of autobiographical information, trace just a little bit of your life history for the listeners, I think, who will be very interested to learn more about you. Were you born in Iran?
Sure. I was born in Iran in 1973 to a family from central Iran, from this beautiful city of Isfahan. But I'm first-generation Tehran-born. I lived in Iran till 1987, which is 8 years after the revolution. After that, my family left. We went to the United Kingdom. After 2 years, in 1991, my parents emigrated to Israel. I stayed in England till 2.5 years ago, and then I also moved to Israel, to the beautiful city of Tel Aviv, which is where I am talking to you from.
Yes. Meir, what in terms of your organization, MEPAS, the Middle East Economic and Political Analysis Company, which again can be found at www.meepas.com, when did you found that organization, and basically what does it do?
Yeah, it was founded in September 2004. It does analysis of the economy and politics of 16 countries of the Middle East. But because I'm Iranian-born, most of the business has been regarding Iran. And the biggest project that we've had to do for last year was a book which I was contracted to write on President Ahmadinejad and Iran's nuclear program. I did the book with another Israeli writer, Yossi Melman, and the book is going to be ready in the United States as of April.
Yes, and I am familiar with Yossi Melman. I have not met him, but I'm familiar with some of his writings. And wasn't he at one time a correspondent or a consultant with CBS News?
The gentleman he worked with, Dan Raviv, was. Yossi Melman has been a writer with Haaretz for many years, but he has been interviewed by all the major international media, including CBS, so I'm sure you've seen him there.
What is your perception, Meir, of this present situation between Iran on the one hand and Israel and the United States on the other? Where do you think this thing is headed? Do you see the possibility of a diplomatic solution, or are we sliding toward a circumstance where armed confrontation is likely to be the outcome?
On the one hand, we've got Israel and United States and also major European countries, United Kingdom, Germany, and France, who are very concerned about a nuclear Iran because of the nature of the regime there. They have been trying to deal with Iran's nuclear program over the last 5 years, especially. But in Iran,
Meir, we're going to take a commercial break. We'll be right back. Hold your thought. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back with Meir Javadanfar of Tel Aviv and his Middle East Economic and Political Analysis Company when we return. Stay tuned.
got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency, and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See headachestaygone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Are you concerned about the high price of prescription drugs? Since January of 2006, RxDrugCard.com members have saved an average of $33 per prescription filled. That's over 46% savings. RxDrugCard.com is the only major discount prescription drug plan that offers a price lookup page so you can get an idea of your discount price before you enroll. RxDrugCard.com is for anyone who pays for their own prescriptions. There are no age restrictions, and all prescriptions are covered. And 95% of all pharmacies in the U.S. participate, including Walmart, Walgreens, CVS Pharmacy, and many more. With RxDrugCard.com, you will save immediately with no messy forms or paperwork. Membership fees start at only $4.50 per month and include a 30-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Visit us at www.RxDrugCard.com or call 888-216-2461. That's 888-216-2461.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Meir Javadanfar of Tel Aviv, Israel, who is both an Iranian and a Jew, and he is the head of something entitled the Middle East Economic and Political Analysis Company, which, again, listeners can find at www.meepas.com. And, Meir, before the break, I asked you whether or not you thought things between Iran on the one hand and Israel and the United States on the other could be solved diplomatically, or whether there was likely to be a military confrontation. Go ahead, sir.
I believe that there can be a diplomatic solution to the current crisis. I think, first and foremost, what the international community recognizes is that it is Iran's right to have nuclear technology. It is every sovereign country's right to have that technology under Article 4 of the United Nations, of the Article 4 of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. But the question, the problem here is that Iran has been caught breaking and cheating its and cheating its obligations. It's been basically hiding its nuclear program, which has created a lot of doubt in the international community. It has also been enriching uranium after a long suspension of its enrichment program, and the international community is asking Iran to stop enrichment and to negotiate. And the Iranian government, under Ahmadinejad, especially who's a right-winger, refuses to recognize that, because Ahmadinejad sees the West as weak, because the administration in Iran from around 2004, middle of 2004, when things really started to go badly for the United States in Iraq, they basically saw the U.S. and the international community as weak, so they decided to take their chance and to make a dash for the finishing line, because they don't believe that the world would be able to impose sanctions against them. So Iran sees itself at the moment as too strong. It doesn't need to negotiate. It doesn't need to stop enrichment. And until that happens, there's little chance for a negotiated settlement there, because the world does not accept Iran's claims that its nuclear program is for peaceful purposes, because of the cheating and also because of the outrageous statements that President Ahmadinejad has been making. So until Iran agrees to make some sort of a sacrifice and some kind of a change in its policy, I see that the chances for a diplomatic solution decreasing. And what we are most likely to see is a set of sanctions imposed against Iran, or at the end of it, unfortunately, there could be war.
In what time frame, let's assume that there is some sort of sanctions regimen that is forthcoming in this situation. Once those sanctions are imposed, what do you think they will be comprised of, and how much time will those sanctions be given before, in your view, before there's likely to be a military conflict?
That's the million-dollar question. But what I imagine and what I would like to see also is that that sanctions are imposed in the beginning, sanctions which target the Iranian government, to target the individuals associated with the nuclear program, or the Iranian government officials who are backing the nuclear program, or all the hardliners who are behind Ahmadinejad. First and foremost, we should target them. We should show to the Iranian people that these sanctions are not meant to punish them. However, if the Iranian government refuses to stop its enrichment program, then what we should see is gradually more and more sanctions against the Iranian regime, against the government, against the way it does business, against the companies that it does business with, as a signal that the international community takes its actions very seriously. Now, if those don't work, then the world may be forced into taking comprehensive sanctions against the Iranian people as well. That may work, but I would say that is very dangerous, because those kind of sanctions were a failure in Iraq and they were a failure in Cuba. And if those are imposed, then I would say that's one step away from war, because as I believe those kind of sanctions wouldn't work. And if until then Iran doesn't stop its enrichment progress, then I'd say the chances of military action would significantly increase. I would say we're looking at a time frame of somewhere between 1 to 3 years.
Yes, and in this regard, I know Pat Buchanan, among others, has made a great deal of the fact that the United States had a change of leadership in its so-called military central command. You had the retirement of an army general, of course, Abizaid, who had that position up to that point, and he was replaced by a Navy admiral who had been the commander-in-chief of American forces in the Pacific, or SINCPAC, Admiral William J. Fallon. Fallon is apparently now the first Navy admiral to head up CENTCOM, and it has been suggested that the reason for Fallon's appointment is because, as a Navy admiral and as someone who has been particularly significant in his background with naval combat aviation, there is this voice suspicion by Pat Buchanan and others that the real reason that Fallon has been appointed to being the head of CENTCOM is so that he could supervise an American military operation against Iran that presumably would involve aircraft carriers. And as I understand it, there have been at least two, some people say three, major American aircraft carrier task force groups that have been deployed to the Persian Gulf region. There is talk that Admiral Fallon, who is presumably an expert both in naval aviation and in keeping sea lanes open, may in fact be planning an American and or Israeli initiative against Iran. What credence do you place in those reports?
I would say that in Israel also a while ago, the chief of staff, the one who just resigned, he was also an Air Force man. And many people said that the reason why he was chosen was because Israel wanted to deal with the Iranian nuclear program, and therefore, as it would use the Air Force, and that's why they chose him, General Chalutz. And it's the same in the United States. I'd say it is very possible that that's the reason, but all these reports and associating the post of the chief of staff with a possibility to attack Iran, all of these are psychological warfare aimed at pressuring the Iranian government to come back to the negotiation table, because the Iranian government, Mark, sees itself as too strong, especially Ahmadinejad. They are too confident in their ability to withstand an American and an Israeli attack, and this is very dangerous. And the West, first and foremost, would like to avoid such a scenario of a military confrontation. So what they're doing is that they are trying to place as much psychological pressure against the Iranians, and hopefully that will work. And if it doesn't, then they'll use the military option, which I would say would be very, very costly for Iran especially. But I think all these reports are related to psychological warfare being applied against Iran. And if they work, and if they bring Iran back to the negotiation table, then I would say they've done their job.
Well, Meyer, you had made reference to the perception of the United States on the part of Ahmadinejad that the American military involvement in Iraq and the obvious problems that the United States is having in Iraq has apparently created a circumstance where Tehran feels that it has even more leeway than before because of the American difficulties to Iran's west. Do you think that that's a prevailing sentiment throughout the Tehran government? And is that a perception throughout the Middle East that the United States has gotten itself involved in a quagmire in Iraq that is going to affect its ability to project its power elsewhere? What's your reading of that?
I would say, first of all, it's most prevalent in Tehran. The Iranians are very happy about what is happening to the United States in Iraq, to the problems that they're having. This is damaging America's image as a strong superpower. And again, this is led to feelings of empowerment in Iran, which are bordering on dangerous arrogance. Because, as I said, the Iranian military, especially the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, where Ahmadinejad was involved, they feel that it was because of them that America is having so much problems in Iraq, because they're supporting the Shiites, because Iran's got so much influence. So this has led to a feeling of almost invincibility, that the Americans are not going to attack us, and this is very dangerous for Iran. But the Iranian regime certainly believes that America's image as a superpower has been severely damaged in Iraq. And at the Middle East level, I would say also, many Arab countries, even those who are friendly to the U.S., are also very skeptical about the way America handled this war and about American military's performance in that part of the world. So, yes, this is the general belief in Iran mostly, and also in the Middle East as well.
As far as this whole situation goes with the present regime in Iran, of course, we go back in the American-Iranian political relationship a long, long time, looking at the post-World War II period of time. There, of course, is a great deal of controversy that exists to this day in regard to what did or did not happen in 1953 when Mohammad Mossadegh was deposed. Then, of course, we had the tragedy of the Islamic Revolution in Iran in the late 1970s, and presumably what was the rejection of both American and British involvement in Iran in that country at that particular time. Now we're going ahead another 30 years to where we are now in regard to the belief of many Iranian expatriates that I hear in the United States that there should be a regime change in Tehran. When we come back from the commercial break, I want to get your take on this whole business of regime change, whether or not you think it's good or bad or possible, and if there is a regime change in Tehran, what it's likely to be. We'll be back with Meir Javadanfar of the Middle East Economic and Political Analysis Company. Stay tuned.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom. But without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. These materials document the global leaders' political and religious working behind the scenes and their plans for us. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 1-888-211-1715. Again, 1-888-211-1715.
How are you preparing ahead for the events in the future? In the near future, we know there will be those of us that will not be able to buy or sell. Stoves and More wants to help give you the freedom from the systems of the world and from skyrocketing fuel prices. Stoves and More is a dealer for all Amish-built wood cook stoves that will give you an independence you need to cook and bake your food, dry fruits and vegetables, heat your whole house water system, and heat your home. These state-of-the-art cook stoves are nothing like Grandma's old stoves. They have large, airtight, efficient fireboxes that give you an all-night burn, easily heating up to 2,000 square feet. Whether or not you're off the grid, we have products for you from stoves to Staber washers and 12 and 24 volt refrigeration. At Stoves and More, we have the perfect products to complete your preparations. To the first 10 people who purchase a stove, we'll send a free copy of our newly released DVD, Getting Started with Wood Cook Stoves. Stoves and More offers the best selection at the lowest prices on the web, so visit us at www.stovesandmoreonline.com. That website again, stovesandmoreonline.com.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonant frequency. If the resonant frequency making the glass vibrate is powerful enough, the size of the vibration will become so large the glass shatters. Using this same principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease-causing organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions Frequency Instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free, 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. Once again, 1-866-885-6625.
Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Meir Javadanfar of Tel Aviv, Israel, born in Isfahan, Iran in 1973. He is the head of something entitled the Middle East Economic and Political Analysis Company, which you can find at www.meepas.com. That's www.meepas.com. Meir, before the break, I was talking a little bit about this whole issue of regime change. There are a lot of Iranian expatriates in the United States who believe that Iran needs a different government. Is that a possibility that you see a regime change coming in Iran? If it is, what do you think will follow it or what should follow it?
Majority of the people in Iran and outside are not happy with the current government, what they've done to the country in terms of its economics and and the political development of the country. But I see the chances for regime change in Iran in the short to medium term future as being very small because of two important reasons. Number one, there is no alternative. Usually for revolution to happen, you need an alternative, somebody or a political party that is going to offer you something better. In Iran, none of the opposition movements are strong enough or popular enough to be able to ferment another revolution in Iran. And also the other reason is because the regime's security services is very strong. So not only there's not a huge underground movement that's willing to bring change, also that the regime has been able to increase its observation and monitoring of the people in a very strong way. So it is very difficult for people to pour out in the streets and then to demonstrate. So because of those two reasons, I believe that the chances for regime change in Iran are very small.
At least in the short term, it would certainly appear to be that way. What do you make of the fact that, of course, when I was in Iran years ago, my parents were stationed there. At the time that you were born, Meyer, I was a college freshman at Valparaiso University in Indiana, in northwest Indiana, about an hour south of the Chicago Loop. And between 1973 and 1977, I would travel to Iran every summer and every Christmas to visit my family. And that was my first primary acquaintance with that country. At that time, of course, Tehran, as I remember, it had something around 4 or 5 million people. Now it has, I think, 15 million. And the population of Iran has grown, from what I have read, to be something today like 70 million. But even more significantly, something like over half of the population, as I understand it, is under the age of 30. Do you think that the possible disenchantment with these young people in regard to the present regime and to the kinds of things that it enforces culturally and religiously, whatever its problems are with running the economy, and the fact that this younger generation has no personal memory of the Pahlavi years that involved the British and the United States and the Israelis, does that suggest that those people under the age of 30 in Iran might prove to be the seeds of a much larger problem for the regime in Tehran down the road?
If the regime if the Islamic regime in Iran does not address growing problems such as unemployment and poverty in Iran, in the longer term, I would say they could certainly be the seeds of discontent within Iran. But again, that would depend on what happens in the future. Will there be a war against Iran? Will there be sanctions against Iran? Will the government bring reform to the regime? Because one of the reasons why the government introduced reform in 1997 was in order to satisfy the thirst for change without the need for another revolution in Iran. So it all depends, but the country and the leadership should and must concentrate on the public's economic well-being. If they don't, I would say that the chances for regime change in the longer-term future would increase, but again, that will depend on if there is somebody who is going to offer them a better future. If there's going to be an Iranian version of Nelson Mandela or Mikhail Gorbachev, then yes. Otherwise, what we might see is more reform to the current system.
What, in terms of Iranian political institutions, as those have been defined by the Islamic constitution that was created after the overthrow of the Shah of Iran, when it comes to the various institutions, political institutions that have been created by that constitution, we read in this country about the Guardians Council, the Expediency Council, the Iranian Majlis or Parliament. We read, of course, about President Ahmadinejad. We read about this whole business of the supreme leader of Iran, Khamenei. And what is, for the average American, trying to get a hold of this? You have a supreme leader who is distinguished from your president, and then you have the Guardians Council and the Expediency Council and the Iranian Majlis or Parliament. I'm going to ask you after the commercial break, what are some of these institutions? What is their relationship to one another? and how does that affect the way that particular government works? This is Mark Dancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We will be back with Myra Javadanfar of NEPAS. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Attention, this is an RBN financial news bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
Many Bible prophecies written thousands of years ago have been fulfilled in the past 100 years. Unknown by most people, even Bible-reading Christians, major end-time prophecies are being fulfilled today, including the one-world government, the one-world religion, the 10-nation confederacy of Daniel and Revelation, the mark of the beast, or 666. Speculation abounds about these ancient prophecies and what they might mean today. Now, one of the most foremost scholars on geopolitics, Dr. Michael Kaufman, who has stopped the ratification of international treaties in the U.S. Senate, has just released a DVD called World Events and Prophecy. His DVD explains how these and other major prophecies are being fulfilled today. Order your copy of World Events and Prophecy. It's only $20 plus shipping and handling at discerningtoday.org or call toll-free 877-271-7639. Don't be caught off guard. Order your copy of World Events and Prophecy at discerningtoday.org.
Come on, Bill. 2 weeks ago, you were riding a bicycle, and today you're showing up in your new car and telling me you're buying a house? What did you do, rob Bill Gates?
No, John, I didn't rob Bill Gates. What I did do is visit the website www.didyourobbillgates.com. That's where I learned how to make $3,000 to $9,000 each and every week, starting with my very first week. It's a simple program that does all the work for you. I'm already up to $25,000 just going on my third week.
Whoa. What was that website again?
It's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Now write this down, John. You should go there and learn how this program can help you become financially independent, too.
Thanks, Bill.
I'm going there right now. Check, please.
You got this one, right, Bill?
Sure, John. Don't forget, it's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Next time, you'll be buying me lunch.
Deal.
Mark Dancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Myra Javadanfar of the Middle East Economic and Political Analysis Company. You can find that website at www.mepas.com. We've been discussing a series of things with Myra this morning related to Iran and Israel. I'll have some questions a little bit later on in the show in regard to Israel. For Meyer to give us his perspective on. But before the break, we were talking a little bit, Meyer, about the various political individuals and institutions that Americans and Westerners read about that involve Iran. You have, of course, the president of Iran, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who's been in power for almost 2 years now. You have the supreme leader of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei, You have institutions like the Guardians Council, the Expediency Council, and the Assembly of Experts, or at least three that I've read of. And then, of course, you have the various branches of the military and the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. In terms of trying to decipher who actually makes fundamental and ultimate decisions for the people of Iran, how do these various individuals and groups relate to one another? How should people in the West understand this?
Excuse me, all these organizations are intertwined, but I'll start from the top and I'll go all the way down to the bottom.
Sure.
At the top is the supreme leader of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei. He replaced Ayatollah Khomeini, the founder of the revolution. In Iran, the supreme leader has got to be a Shiite cleric who's reached the level of religious credentials where he's able to issue fatwa. So he's got to be very senior. I can compare him best to the Pope in the Western world. He's the Pope of the Shiites. Below him is the Guardian Council. There are 12 members. There are 6 of them are specialists in religion, theologians, and 6 of them are legal experts. And their job is just to make sure that all the laws passed in Iran are in accordance to Islam and in accordance to the Iranian constitution. They also vet all candidates who are running for elections in all of Iran's elections, which are for the majlis, for the parliament, and for the assembly of experts, and for the president. One below that is the Expediency Council. The Expediency Council is in charge of resolving disputes between the Guardian Council and the majlis. That's what it does, like a referee. In the majlis, where we have 290 elected members, sometimes they issue a law or issue a decree, and what happens is that the Guardian Council has got to approve that. Now, the Guardian Council doesn't always approve it, so if it doesn't approve, then the Majlis has got the right to go to the Expediency Council to appeal, and that's his job. The members of the Majlis, those 290 members, are elected every 4 years. The next elections are actually for next year, 2008. As I said, there are 290 members. All of them have got to be vetted by the Guardian Council to ensure that they all believe in the Islamic regime and they've got the right political background. That's basically it. And then below that we have the Assembly of Experts, which is the least active body in the Iranian political system because its members are chosen every 8 years. It meets only twice a year, and its job is to choose the next supreme leader. It's a little bit like the College of Cardinals in the Vatican. If the supreme leader is ill or he needs replacing, then that's their job. Also, if the supreme leader is not doing his job in accordance to the constitution, that is the only body in Iran who can remove him. And they had an election in 2006, and the next elections are going to be held in 2014.
Boy, that is really an excellent summary. I mean, it gives me just a layperson's grasp of this that augments what I've been reading about in the last several years. Interesting to see how these various institutions play out in regard to the Iranian political scene. Mr. Rafsanjani comes to mind as someone who has had a lot of influence in Iran over a very long period of time. Of course, he lost the presidential election to Ahmadinejad. What do you see as Rafsanjani's present political position in Iran? Obviously, he's still a major player, isn't he?
He's very much a major player. He's still the head of the Expediency Council. He was elected for the next Assembly of Experts with the highest number of votes in Tehran. He was the runaway winner. He's a man who's been around since the beginning of the revolution. He's not a reformist. He's much more pragmatic. He believes that Iran should go forward by bringing about economic development and better relations with the West, whereas Ahmadinejad is much more interested in centralization of power in the government's hand and confrontation against the West, because Ahmadinejad believes that Iran or the Iranian revolution must continue, otherwise it doesn't justify its creation in 1979. Now, because of Ahmadinejad's recent damaging statements against the West and against Israel, there are many, many reformists in Iran, and many former conservatives are calling for a more pragmatic line to be taken against the West, because it doesn't do Iran's nuclear program any favors if the president is calling for annihilation of other countries. Who is going to believe Iran's nuclear program is for civilian purposes when the president makes such statements? So they believe that that an alternative should be supported in order to present a more sellable face of Iran and Iran's nuclear program, and they see Ayatollah Rafsanjani as that man. He's a much more shrewd businessman. He's a much more shrewd politician. He's got a multi-billion-dollar business running in Iran. And compared to Ahmadinejad, he's traveled much more. You know, before the Islamic Revolution, he took a road trip in the United States. He went to 20 states in a car, and you know, he's been to Japan. He's been to many other countries. So, because he's got a much more worldly view and a much better understanding of foreign affairs, people are coming to see him as a possible alternative to the conservatives headed by Ahmadinejad. And their hope is that at the next presidential elections in Iran in 2009, Rafsanjani, if he decides to run, or his supporters, will do better, because the government's current tough line against the West is only damaging Iran's position.
As far as Iran is concerned, you know, I have read in Sandra Mackey's book on Iran that you, of course, in addition to people who trace their origins back to Persia and who are called Persians, that there are a variety of other ethnic groups in Iran of varying percentage who have their own cultures and in several cases utilize languages in addition to the Iranian Farsi or Persian. How do you see those various groupings? Who are they, and what is their own relation to the central government in Tehran? I think, for example, of the Arabs who live in Khuzestan province in Iran. I think of the situation where we have received a lot of reports in the Western press that there have been allegedly some people in Azerbaijan who have not been terribly happy with the central government of Tehran. How does all of this play out in these various regions of Tehran with ethnic groups and tribes and regions? Will all of them ultimately stay with a central government under the control of Tehran? Or over the course of years, will we see in some instances, and I'm thinking of Azerbaijan, Khuzestan province, and Balochistan province, just to name three, some tendency to move away from governance by Tehran?
In Iran, only 51% of the population is Persian.
Yes.
The next biggest minority in the country are the Azeris, the Azerbaijanis. They make up 24% of Iran's population. There are some independence movements in Azerbaijan who want to break away from Iran, although they're very small at the moment. But this is a very important and a major concern for the Tehran government. If these independence movements gather support and possibly break away, this would be an absolute disaster for Iran if that happens, because Azerbaijan is Iran's only border with Turkey and through that, through Europe. So if Iran loses that, then Iran has lost a strategic land crossing to Europe. And also, Azeris are extremely well-educated people. They have been very, very influential in Iran's history, dating back to the constitutional revolution. So this is a major concern in Iran. The other movements are the Kurds, who make up 7% of Iran. And the Kurdish have been trying to have an independent homeland in Iran for many years, dating back to the 1920s even, when they managed to have an independent homeland for a total of 2 weeks in the Mahabad area. They have been fighting central government in Tehran for many years. I would say they are at the moment they are the weakest, because Tehran has managed to suppress them, but that remains a serious worry for Iran. And then we have the Arabs in Khuzestan region, as you rightly mentioned. They, in the beginning of the war, some of them supported Saddam Hussein because Saddam Hussein wanted to help them create an Arab homeland, an Arab province there, but The Iranian government is very active in Khuzestan right now. They've had a major crackdown. There have been a number of bombs there, but the Iranian government has kept them under control. I think the chances of independence for them are decreasing every day because Iran's got such good relations with Iraqi Shiites, who across the border are sandwiching the Iranian Arabs. So without their support, the Iranian Arabs are going to have a very hard time coming up with any realistic chances of revolution in Iran. And then what we have seen recently are terrorist activities in the Balochistan region where they've been attacking civilians, and in some cases there have been military attacks against the Revolutionary Guards there. All of these are small independence movements in Iran. They are a major concern to the Iranian government, but the Ahmadinejad regime is not taking any chances. They are cracking down on them very hard, and as I've said before, unless the regime addresses the economic issues first and foremost, then we are likely to see more unrest in these areas because of people's genuine concern and genuine discontent, and also because I think these independence movements will be very handy tools for the great powers of United Kingdom and the United States to stir up trouble in Iran as means of weakening central government. So unless the regime takes care of these problems, then I'd say yes, we are likely to see more calls for independence from such regions.
Now, I have seen reports in a number of places in the international press and to a limited extent in the United States in places like Pat Buchanan's magazine, The American Conservative, that indicate that there is reason to believe that the American CIA and the British MI6 and the Israeli Mossad have been involved in stirring up some of these tensions in Azerbaijan and Khuzestan province and Balochistan. Do you see any evidence of that?
There haven't been any solid evidence that's been presented by anyone to say that. But, you know, it would certainly be in the Western intelligence agencies' interest to see kind of civil discontent in Iran, because that would distract the government away from confronting the West, and it would create a new front against the central government in Tehran. So what has happened there, it is possible that they are receiving support from Western governments, and whatever happens there, the more discontent there is in such areas, the better it is for Western governments. As for Israel's position here, I'm not sure, but I would say Israel, if it is involved in intelligence issues in Iran, I'd say they are probably focusing on Iran's nuclear program, because to Israel, that's the number one priority.
What in terms of, well, I mean, I think of so many questions I could ask you here because of your knowledge of this subject in regard to Israel and this whole question of Iran's nuclear capability and the controversy over the enrichment of uranium and the controversy over whether or not Iran is developing a program in nuclear power that would have military applicability. Some of the statements coming out of certain quarters of the Israeli military and intelligence communities, as we read them in the Jewish press, I'm referring to the Jerusalem Post and Haaretz, some of the things certainly that have been posted by the Jewish Telegraphic Agency worldwide, suggests that from time to time there are people in the Israeli political and military establishment who have said unequivocally that Israel will never accept an Iran that has a nuclear weapons program of any type, and that if that program is not checked either through diplomatic means or through some concerted Western military action against Iran, that Israel would be prepared to go it alone and to strike Iran with its own military weaponry and military establishment. Do you take those statements seriously? And if so, how long will Israel, in your view, give the situation before they decide to act unilaterally?
I would say because of the recent statements by Ahmadinejad, the level of concern in Israel has gone up significantly. When a president of a country comes and tells you that you should be eliminated, nobody can take the chance of not believing him. That includes Israel, Switzerland, or the United States, any country in the world. When an enemy makes such a threat, then you've got to be extremely careful. I think the Israeli line is that first let's try to find negotiations. Let's try to settle this issue through negotiations. Israel is very much backing the United States line in this, that Iran should stop enrichment the enrichment process and then negotiate. However, if everything else fails, there is a chance that Israel may take action on its own. I think they prefer not to. I think if there is going to be military attack against Iran, I think Israel would prefer it if the United States participated. But if the United States refuses, I think there is a chance that Israel might take such an action. But again, that depends on the quality of intelligence that Israel has. Because if they find out that it is impossible to destroy Iran's nuclear program, and therefore by attacking it, the only thing that they will achieve is to irate the Iranians and bring discontent in the Middle East, in Iraq, in Lebanon and other places, then Israel may decide that it's maybe in its interest to live with a nuclear Iran. That all depends on the level of intelligence that Israel and other countries have at their disposal. But I would say Israel does not want to see a nuclear Iran in any way, shape or form, as much as it can try to stop it. And first and foremost, Israel wants to find a solution through negotiations, because war is not in Israel's interest, and I think they'll try to avoid that.
We'll be back with Meir Javed Anfar of the Middle East Economic and Political Analysis Company. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. These materials document the global leaders, political and religious working behind the scenes, and their plans for us. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 1-888-211-1715. Again, 1-888-211-1715.
We've all considered solar power at one time or another, and self-sufficiency will be your key to a better future. Ken Solar can help you get off the grid and become self-sufficient with solar power, and for a lot less than you would think. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar power generator, for a lot less than you'd expect. This portable system can chop off nearly a third of your electric bill, a good start for any families out there wanting to get solar power for your home. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos, and how-tos, and of course, the new solar power generator. Use the coupon code RBN with your purchase and save an additional 10% off your order. Get a solar power generator now from kensolar.com at 239-677-3073. Again, that's 239-677-3073 or on the web at kensolar.com. Ken Solar, the home of all your solar needs.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency, and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Mark Ancos America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Meir Javadanfar of the Middle East Economic and Political Analysis Company. You can find that at www.meepas.com. When we archive this show on the Republic Broadcasting Network archive, we, of course, will have a description of Meir's biography and with a link to his site. I will also post information on this show with Breaking All the Rules News, the leading American paleoconservative site in the World Wide Web, and that will give a description of what we talked about today, as well as a brief biography of Meir, and in a link to his website where people all over the United States and the world who read Breaking All the Rules News can become acquainted with MEPAS, which you can find again at www.meepas.com. Also wanted to warn our guests as well as our listeners that in the next 5 minutes, the next 10 minutes or so, we will be interrupted frequently by commercial breaks, and then there will be a longer period of time for more continuous conversation again. Listeners can support the Republic Broadcasting Network by giving us a call at 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719. You can also find us on the World Wide Web at www.republicbroadcasting.org. That's www.republicbroadcasting.org. You can have Aaron Russo's new DVD, America, Freedom to Fascism, for $19.95 plus $4.95 shipping and handling by using those same contact points, 1-800-724-2719. Or contacting us in the World Wide Web at www.republicbroadcasting.org. And suffice it to say that when it comes to the Republic Broadcasting Network, we're constantly in the business of expanding our operations in three areas. One is in the acquisition of relationships with conventional radio affiliates in the United States. My newest one is WMQM AM 1600. That's a 50,000-watt station in Memphis, Tennessee, that will be bringing Mark Dankoff's America and the Republic Broadcasting Network to a much wider audience in the American South. At the same time, we're expanding our outreach on international shortwave and doing the same thing on the World Wide Web, as we are constantly at work to get our archives reestablished and uploaded onto our basic website. One of our techs was telling me today that the new archives are taking a little bit longer to upload because of a change in system that we're going to be using that will help both the hosts of the shows as well as the later browsers of these shows and topics. So when that happens, we will really have a better archive system than we've ever had before. That's in the works. It is being worked upon, and I'll keep you abreast of that development in the days ahead as well. Meir, we're likely to be interrupted again by another commercial break in the next couple of minutes, and I hear the music playing, so stay with us. I have a question to ask you about the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps and the relationship of that organization to the Iranian military and governmental structure. We'll be back. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back with Meir Javadanfar of the Middle East Economic and Political Analysis Company at MEPAS.com. Stay tuned.